Welcome to our next episode of the 5 Moments of Need AI Matters podcast series. This is Chris King, one of the co-hosts you'll meet throughout the series. We aim to bring order and focus to the AI discussion in and around the L&D world, exploring how it aligns with frameworks like the 5 Moments of Need and content management. Throughout the coming months, we will be sharing both expert insights and real-life examples from practitioners. In this episode, we dive deep into the future of technology and learning with our guest, Mike Horoska, a true visionary in technology, learning, and design thinking. He highlights the significant mismatch between educational technology's potential and its actual impact on efficacy, which propelled him into exploring the intersection of technology, people performance, and learning. Mike believes we can leverage AI through intelligent agents to foster an augmented enterprise. He has an innovative outlook on harnessing frameworks to unlock human potential and drive meaningful organizational change. Mike's story encourages us to think creatively about using technology and learning, making sure it helps us achieve our goals and push boundaries. Hello, friends, and welcome back to the AI Matters podcast series. Today, Con Godfredson and I are talking with Mike Horoska. Mike's a technologist and design thinking practitioner, and he has a background as a researcher for the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST. And Mike, that's an unconventional background for our L&D industry. I suspect that it means you have deep roots in the AI side of technology, too. So can you give our listeners a quick summary of your journey with AI?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm obsessed with learning. I'm a naively curious person and been fascinated by technology since I was a child. And no matter what happens, it's somehow the application of that technology always brings me to learning and development, because developing people is such an important thing. My first intersection with this was helping the University of Pittsburgh system, when I was in college, built out their distance learning program. I thought, this is going to be the most amazing thing. Technology, expertise, professors, this is going to be amazing. And it was suboptimal. And that was the first time that I realized that the intersection between learning, education, training, and technology is the space that we can make the biggest difference in people's lives. But we tend to not necessarily do that. We turn into blackboard and do a whiteboard. We turn into whiteboard and do a smartboard. But did it help people get better, smarter, faster? Did it improve efficacy? Did it do any of those things? No. And so I became really obsessed with this intersection between people, performance, and technology. Spent, my time at NIST working in standards and technology development and transformation, and really started to get a feel for the transformational capabilities that were coming down the pipeline. Back in 2002, I had self-driving cars in my parking lot at NIST. We had self-driving robots going down the hall. I became really fascinated about, like, how do we make software better, in some ways? And I could think, when having conversations with my brother and saying, wait a second, I teach you stuff, you teach me stuff, we learn things together. Why can't we write software that helps us scaffold our learning or support us intelligent, adaptive ways a long time? So I left the government research space, officially still do work in the government research space, 20 years ago. And what we've seen in terms of technology advancements have been really, really unbelievable. What we've seen generally happen over decades is only weeks of progress. But in recent times, decades of progress are happening. We're starting to move into this dog year period, where 1 year of human existence is really 7 years in terms of technology transformation. So over the last 15 or so years, gotten a lot of DoD and National Science Foundation funding to think about hard problems related to adaptive systems, learning ecosystems, intelligent tutoring systems, and AI-driven adaptive learning. And I think, as learning and development professionals, we're at the best point we could be, because there's a golden age where our position and relevance and ability to help an organization not learn the things it needs to know to do the job, but learn the things it needs to know to become the organization of the future. It's right here in front of every single person. And so, just one sort of final thing in summary, a year and a half ago, really saw with the onset of things like GPT 3.5 and others we're going to do. And we said, let's pretend something that's maybe a little controversial. Let's pretend AI isn't a thing. Let's just pretend it's really good software. And let's think about it that way and think about how to instantiate that software in places inside of our own organization, not just eat our own dog food, but make our own dog food. And let's build agents, not chatbots. There's a big difference. Let's build agents that have high degrees of intelligence, high degrees of skills, and use those agents to elevate us inside of what we would call an augmented enterprise, where we're augmenting the experience of individuals, teams, and groups to not use AI to do our jobs, but use AI to unlock the human intelligence inside of our organization.
Mike, that's amazing. You hit some of the high points of what a technology landscape might look like just by running through that quick summary of your journey there. So I'm really looking forward to digging into some of those things a little bit more with you. But speaking of that current AI technology landscape, you mentioned some of these things, agents and the augmented enterprise. Tell us a little bit more about where you see the current AI technology landscape. What are some of the things we need to be looking out for in the next 6, 12, 18 months?
You mean in the next 7 to 30 years of progress that happened in the next couple of
Yes,
months? Yeah,
exactly.
if you want to get a feel for it, here's a data point. There's an AI for that.com uses AI to scour the internet, look at all of the AI tools and features and things that are available. Then it uses the Department of Labor job categories and looks at the skills and duties and responsibilities inside of those jobs. Then it maps out an entire job impact index for every single job that is out there that you can imagine and shows the percentage of the tasks that are getting replaced. I'd encourage anyone to go to there's an AI for that.com and find a job or something and have a peek because it's accelerated at an accelerating rate. Lucas Petty, also known as AI Daddy on X, is doing a great job of collecting and curating AI tools that are out there. Maybe 8 or 9 months ago, he had a curated list of 600 AI tools that do everything from audio and video and image types of things. I think about 10 days ago, he just released his 2,500 tools list. So there's no shortage. I mean, how many rabbit holes can you possibly go down? Right? It's pretty insane. But it's exciting because there's literally an AI for basically anything that you might want to do. And I think that becomes a challenging landscape because people get into a bit of a hedgehog position and say, well, do I want to buy something if something better is going to come out? We talk about one-way doors and two-way doors. So if I make this decision, it's a one-way door and I'm stuck inside of it, I need to be able to get out. So I think there's no shortage of technologies that are out there. The operative thing to think about is pretty much the technology to do anything that you want to do capability-wise inside an organization is really here. It's really about engineering and change management. And those are the two really focal things that organizations really need to consider as they're thinking about their journey of becoming an augmented enterprise.
I wonder if in that journey, like you just described, there is so much going on. And here I am, I'm in an organization trying to figure out how to make things better in the work that I do, how to help the business be in the world of learning, be more effective in all of that. And so there's got to be a way for us to bring some order to all of this chaos. And my experience is that if we can find some meaningful frameworks to start to work from, that can be very helpful. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are in terms of how to bring order to this in the context of meaningful contribution within an organization in the world of learning, and if there are some frameworks that you're seeing that could be helpful there.
Yeah, there's a couple things. There's a dichotomy in thinking that's required. So there are a couple of tug of wars in every organization's future. You've got to have enterprise thinking if you're going to bring things into the organization that are going to have impact on security and policy and culture. And so you got to consider the standard enterprise thinking. But in order to do these things, you have to have the entrepreneurial thinking at the same time. And those are two different hats, essentially. Chris Hively, who wrote the book called Build the Fort, says that everything you need to know on your entrepreneurial journey, you learned as a child when you built a fort, which means you find a team, find a shared dream, find spare parts, put something together, and see what doesn't work and see what works. Build upon that. So it's very iterative in terms of the entrepreneurial stance. The enterprise, is something else. And then you said one of my favorite words, chaos. So there's an entropy factor associated with this, and there's an empathy factor too. So we've got to think about order and disorder, and we've got to think about people as well. And so I said earlier, like, if we just pretend that AI is just maybe really good software, then we can start to think about things in a less scary way, and we can start to use design thinking to really understand and visualize what our space in the future looks like. I call it going perpendicular, going around the corner into the hidden future, understanding future casting where we might be, how we might get there, and coming back to get an understanding. Now, there are a lot of things that I see happen very quickly when people start to think about using AI in the organization. They think automatically about automation. They think automatically about replacing jobs. They think automatically about increasing annual revenue per employee. Organizations that have that stance are one type of organization. The ones that I really like are the ones that are saying, we love our people, we love our organization, we want a bigger footprint in the market space. And those organizations are interesting because they start to think about, how do we increase sales and how do we increase people and their perception of performance to drive productivity? So that's another sort of fundamental design pattern. But there are a couple things an organization needs to really understand. Why AI? What are the hopeful outcomes if we used it? And what are the metrics? And that's kind of conversation one as table stakes. Like, oh, you guys want to build a fort? Great. Why would we build a fort? What's our hopeful outcome? Oh, we won't get rained on, or we could sleep outside and, you know, at night and won't be cold. How will we know? Well, whoever gets hypothermia, you know, refuted that hypothesis, right? And so those are like really big questions that organizations really need to start having conversations with. Find a team, find a shared dream, and really get down. Why would we want to do AI in our organization? What are our hopeful outcomes and metrics? There's bigger conversations beyond that. What do we need to consider? Different industries, different needs, different size of company, different thinking, different point in evolution of the company, you know, different thinking, but considerations, known unknowns, because that's what always gets us, boy, when we're not looking, is those known unknowns. The unknown unknowns are even worse, but if we get our known unknowns down, even better. And then what are our next steps? Because this is just the beginning of a conversation for that organization.
Yeah, you know, my challenge is that historically, it seems like we get caught up in the excitement of the technology, and we fail to ask a very important question, and that is, how does this help us do what we've been hired to do? What is the impact that we need to have upon the organization? I just co-authored an article that was all about, if you want to have a job when we get through all of this, make sure that you're delivering real impact to the organization. Why are we doing what we're doing? Our job in learning, for example, is to ensure that people can perform effectively on the job, to ensure that people can do the work in the most effective way possible for the organization to succeed. And we've got to keep that in mind and be looking, it seems to me, at the purposes of what we're about, and making sure that we're driving to those purposes. And as you said, measuring, delivering real impact and being able to show that impact to the organization.
I completely agree. Just because we have technology doesn't mean we should use it. You know, there's some amazing science experiments, don't get me wrong, that can be done with this. There are some amazing areas of impact that are really underserved currently. You know, the mental health space, parents of children with any types of challenges. There's a lot of static web information out there, but imagine if you had a personalized agent that could help parents with anything related to their kiddos and interventions along the way. And these are some of the spaces that I really like working in because there's not enough impact in them. And what AI could do is amazing. It's one thing to change the game at a company, increase sales by 10%, productivity by 6.2, or have a 100x ROI project, or save someone 36,000 hours a year. But really making impact in some of these other areas, I think, is one of the really big opportunities out in front of humanity in terms of our human progress dimension.
Absolutely. Our folks, I mean, we're focusing in here on organizational learning and the impact of that. I mean, those are the folks who are listening to us. It is wonderful, the potential of AI beyond that and improving the lives of people. The questions that we're wrestling with right now in the world of organizational learning are about how do we take advantage of all of this movement in technology in a systematic way that will benefit the organization that hires us to help them, you know, and we can't lose sight of that in this world of organizational learning.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's so interesting. I'll give you an example. I was doing a workshop for a global manufacturing company, and they had 28 executives in the workshop. Only 4 of the executives had ever used ChatGPT before. which is great because I got to introduce them to a bunch of concepts around org design, the possibilities and affordances associated with AI technology. And then we sent them out on their way. They had already done the why AI, hopeful outcomes and metrics on their own. Then they brought that together and they started to look at use cases and proofs of concept ideas and data readiness. And it was a 1 hour sprint for them to do this. And I saw two people in one group that had mobile phones and they were looking at each other and smiling. And I said, what are you guys doing? And they said, we're using ChatGPT. And I said, how? And they said, well, we asked it to give us ideas for AI in manufacturing. And I said, stop, start over, pretend a 20-year-old intern named Sam just walked in. Tell Sam your names, your ages, your degrees, your tenure at the company and your role, and tell Sam your mission of this workshop and ask Sam to just ask you questions. And they said, what? And I said, just try it. And so they did. And so, you know, in thinking fast, thinking slow, Kahneman says system one and system two thinking. System one's fast and improv, and system two is evaluative and analytical. And any LLM is going to do a good job at doing the system two thinking for us. Write me a 508-word blog about the benefits of dry aging meat. Hour and 40 minutes for me to do it. 14 seconds for it to do it. But being able to tap into our human intelligence as individuals and teams is something that AI can really, really do quite well. So AI facilitated all the groups in that workshop I was talking about. Everyone came back together. And as we did the checkout from the workshop, people said things like, we did more in the last hour to think about the future of this company than we did since I've been here for 20 years. Wow. Because there's a really good opportunity for AI to tap into what we have, which is our focus and our creativity and our connective, you know, collaborative tissue that we can have as a knowledge-based organization. And that's why I think this is such a good fit when thinking about not just individual learning and performance, but organizational learning and performance as well.
I love that you're tying in the Kahneman's fast and slow, the two systems, and it goes along with HBR or it goes along with a Harvard Business Review article that I just read about the jagged edge of AI and how if what you're trying to do with AI falls within its capabilities, then it's going to be a real game changer for you and increase your productivity and really get into helping you do your job better. But if it falls outside of the capabilities of AI, then it actually can harm you and create more of a drag on the work that you're doing. So are there other blind spots that we need to be looking out for when we're thinking about how to use AI in terms of helping our organizations learn better or improve performance in our organizations?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, what I see a lot are some very quick knee-jerk reactions to certain things. One good example is large organizations, HR leadership, when thinking about how AI can impact the organization, immediately gravitate to, well, we could have it look at resumes. Well, there's 13 biases associated with that. And that's a tough one. That's a road fraught with peril. But a lot of people are going down that road. And I kind of say, hey, like human resources, isn't your goal to develop everyone? If you had unlimited budget, what would you spend it on? I'd give every person in my organization a coach. It's the first thing I do. I'd help them, you know, reflect and anticipate and practice and resolve conflict or any cognitive dissonance or things that they might have along the way. So that's one of the first things that we did was develop an AI coach that's like the best podcast interviewer ever, combined with something that's really trying to understand how you communicate, how you frame information, so it can frame information better to you and adapt to you, you know, essentially over time. That has a huge lift because we could use AI and record all our meetings internally. We could use AI, we could capture all of our sales calls or consulting calls or learning calls, whatever they might be. But there's another element of an organization when you think about the idea of collective intelligence inside of an organization. So two fundamental patterns that I look at in an organization are knowledge flows and learning loops. Where is new knowledge created? What are the conditions under which that new knowledge is created? And how does that knowledge flow from there to places where people either need to consume it or to be able to put that knowledge into practice in what I would call a learning loop? And you've all heard this before about how someone's in a downward spiral as a company or an individual. What does the opposite look like? What does a thriving spiral look like in an organization where freedom of ideas and freedom of innovation are consistently enabled and people are empowered to take action for constant, never-ending improvement. I think that when we think about the organizational models that we have here too, we're going to have to rethink them around this idea that, yeah, we have a real human org chart, but in order to really show what our organization is, we're not going to have an IT system map in an org chart. We're going to have an org chart that actually has agents on the org chart showing who they report to and showing who uses them and pools of resources. And I'm very present with this because we not only eat our own dog food, we make it, and we're going through this exact modeling exercise because I have 13 agents that work for me. Three of those agents also work for other people. So it gets into this very interesting combination of hierarchy and hierarchy. So I think the key thing for everyone to remember is we're only limited by our imagination. And so if we think, oh, it's a chatbot, then that's all it will ever be. If we think it's an agent that helps me, as an example, develop a lot of products for people and normally talk to someone, understand, spend an hour, maybe an analyst is with me, go back to three different individuals, have them work on concepts, bring those concepts back, evaluate those concepts, merge the concepts into a product concept brief. 8 to 14 human hours. We trained an agent 7-8 months ago on this, 8 seconds.
Wow.
So I can take way less information from a customer when I develop a new product or technology that doesn't exist and run it because it goes to three independent agents that spin up a team. And the teams do independent work. And then another agent, which would have been me, comes in, evaluates that work and synthesizes the work. So 8 to 14 hours to 8 seconds. So think about this frame. Start with the pains, not the gains, right? So you might talk to 10 people and only 8 of them would, you know, might do the project. So that's like 80 to 100 plus hours, essentially. Okay, well, now it's 80 seconds. Basically. So start with the pains, not the gains. Don't start with the job, start with the tasks. There's a lovely area of thinking out there called fractal process asset modeling. Posits that every organization is a big process that consumes artifacts and puts out artifacts. They could be physical artifacts, they could be digital artifacts. But if you unpack that organization, there's sub-processes that consume and create artifacts. That product development example, that's just one of the processes. And so we looked at what do we do often that needs a better outcome, or what do we do often that doesn't always get the outcome that we want to automate doing in some ways. I think Tom Malone from MIT says, from humans in the loop to computers in the group. And I really like that framing. There's a number of other ways to think about it. Atomize and automate is another design frame to consider as well. How can I constrain this down to the smallest possible thing and get the most value so that we as humans can use our human intelligence on top of that data?
We're talking there about specializing, hyper-specializing agents to do just one thing, but do it really, really well. And then because it's so easy to spin up these different agents that can do different things, you can put them together in a way that makes it a team. Just like you said, you talked about creating a team of agents of which you are one of the members of the team.
Yeah, I just get to hold the baton and talk a little bit about the piece and the orchestra, right? And because ultimately, these are some of the design patterns for the future. Autonomy and orchestration. So if you could say, hey, I'm going to Columbus next week. Find me 10 companies I should talk to, just like customers we have that are in Columbus, and do all the research for me. Sam, as the intern, right? Sam, go get me a list of companies. Let me validate the companies. Okay, now go build me a dossier on all those companies, and now build me a package to get in touch with each of the people. Okay, and now you start doing your work, and I'm going to do the human work of trying to call them on the phone. That type of autonomy is game changer in the sales world and sales intelligence, sales enablement along the way.
Yeah.
So as we run forward, and I want to run forward like you're running forward. Goodness gracious. So impressive. Any cautions as we all try to get our arms around this and run with folks like you who have such a remarkable vision and experience?
So I'd be very careful about the prepositions. So AI on us is a very bad way to think about it. AI with us is a better way to think about it. AI for us is the best way to think about it. So what's our relationship with AI as humans and as an organization, I think is the number one thing for an organization to understand. You know, why are we doing this? And how are we communicating why we're doing this, not just to our employees, but to our customers as well? You can think about employee experience and customer experience. I tend to think about them as organizational experience. You might be an employee, you might be a customer, you might be a shareholder, but there's an experience, associated with that. We're going to be in the technology model race for a long, long time. And so one-way doors, two-way doors. So modularity is going to be key because there's always going to be a better model. And it might not be a better large language model. There might be better smaller models out there that are more specialized because as a business owner, do I need a model that knows about dinosaurs and physics and all of those things? Maybe, probably not. And so smaller models could be there. There are other considerations around compute costs as well, because none of these things are free, because all of those ultimately lead to the environmental implications associated with this. But it's not something that one person can do inside a company. Companies that I'm seeing successfully evolve along this from reactive to emerging to innovative to optimized along the evolutionary pathway, they've got a team inside that's kind of driving it. There's a formal team, maybe a committee, stakeholder group in some ways, but they're highly linked with external factors to help them learn. Because this is at its face value, after you peel all the onions, this is a learning problem. Organization exists the way the organization exists. A new world has emerged outside of the organization. How does the organization learn about that new world, sense it, and augment itself so that it's able to survive in the context of the external market transformations that are occurring?
Mike, I have a quick question. You mentioned now a couple of times one-way doors and two-way doors. Do you have any advice on how to recognize whether one of those doors is a one-way door or a two-way door?
It's hard. It's hard, and it requires a combination of change management OD thinking along with technology to really, really evaluate that. But the easiest way to think about it is modularity. You should be able to assume that in 3 months, your language model that you're using to power your stuff could be obsolete, could be non-existent, and you have to have alternatives and have built in the capabilities to swap.
So one last question. Say I'm a practitioner, I'm on a learning team, I'm trying to figure out what this AI is and what I ought to be doing. How do I begin and roll up my sleeves and not be afraid of it, but move and take advantage of all of this?
Yes. Yeah, there is some element of analysis paralysis. Like, where's the best place to go to get your AI news? Wherever you go is where you go, right? But the best place to learn things about the art of the possible is YouTube University. There's so much expansion that's going on. I have a whole team of people and a whole Slack channel dedicated to consistent organizational learning about the art of the possible and the edge. But I really, really think that I've tried personally to give L&D and HR professionals the breadcrumbs that they can follow for a trail. So I've written a whole series of articles on our journey of becoming an augmented enterprise ourselves, what we learned, the steps to do it, best practices and pitfalls and all of the different things so that someone can kind of shine a flashlight, my flashlight from our past into their own future to kind of look at that. And they're available at bit.ly/MikeHArticles. And there's a number of articles and presentations on the idea of the augmented enterprise, the steps that you need to take there, what your upskilling looks like, how to apply AI to individuals, to groups, and to teams. Because I want people to see the art of the possible before they see the art of the practical stuff out of the gate. And that's the knee-jerk reaction. It's like, well, let's just have a look at resumes. Well, yeah, that could be fine, but there's probably 19 other things in front of that that are more meaningful for impact in the enterprise and having a more humanistic organization.
I really appreciate the view that you've brought today, Mike, especially this view of higher order thinking around AI, moving beyond, like you said, the let's sort out resumes to how do we impact people and work better and smarter with the help and the assistance of AI. That's a really wonderful gift that you bring. So thank you for that. Anything, Mike, that you feel like you need to say beyond the great gifts that you've given us in this podcast?
This is the best time to be alive for technology. This is the beginning of a golden age of human progress, and we are uniquely positioned in learning and development to help our organizations not just learn about, but adapt and adopt things that are going to make organizations of the future. No better way for our L&D professionals in the community to give back than to move our companies forward.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure hanging out with you.
Well, that's it for this episode of the 5 Moments of Need AI Matters podcast series. We look forward to future conversations about how to best put the 5 Moments of Need into practice with artificial intelligence. We welcome your feedback and can be reached on LinkedIn at the 5 Moments of Need or on our website, www.5momentsofneed.com. We hope you're finding these helpful and that you'll subscribe for future episodes. Have a great day, friends.